welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line, how to identify embellishments during an interview. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. We'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, then we'll jump into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement to help keep organizations off the rocks of potential self-destruction. We do this through our in-depth work style assessments to raise the hiring bar, and we assist sales and operations in avoiding getting stuck in shallow water so they have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations, and if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we'll open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes during our program so you can share the ideas and consider them with and implement them with your team and trusted advisors. I want to introduce our special guest today is Barry Deutsch, who is a longtime friend, trusted advisor. He is the man that knows everything on hiring. He's a well-known thought leader in hiring and peak performance management. He is a frequent and sought-after speaker for management meetings, trade associations, and CEO forums such as Vistage International, formerly known as TEC. It's a worldwide CEO membership organization of more than 15,000 CEOs and senior executives. Many of his clients view him as their virtual chief talent officer. Vistage International has named Barry Impact Speaker of the Year. Barry is also frequently asked to present Impact Hiring Solutions, award-winning programs on hiring, retention, and motivating top talent, and leveraging a vast knowledge base of 25 years in the executive search field. With a track of successful placements to multi-billion dollar Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurial firms, and mid-market high-growth businesses, Barry has quite a following along the way. He has worked closely with thousands of CEOs and key executives to help improve hiring success, leverage human capital, and raise the hiring bar on talent acquisition. Barry earned his BA and MA from the American University in Washington, D.C., and prior to his executive search career, Barry held positions of responsibilities in finance and general management with Mattel, Beatrice Foods, and Westinghouse Cable, and he has, believe me, a vast knowledge, and I just treasure my relationship with Barry. I feel privileged to have him with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of the program today, and the topic will be 7 imperatives for the 21st century leaders. Barry, I want to welcome you, and thank you so much for joining us on Open Line.
Thank you, Dana. So let's talk a little about, I guess, the first thing in our program today is I'll give a little bit of a background of what maybe has brought me to this stage, just so you have an understanding of how this has developed, and then we'll jump right into it. So for the last 25 years, I've been doing executive search, and after about the first 8 to 10 years, my partners and I stepped back, and we said to ourselves, there's something really screwy that goes on in hiring. It seems like sometimes the very best interviewers are the ones who get the job, and frequently they're not the very best performers. And the ones who screw up interviewing or don't do well in interviewing sometimes have awesome on-the-job performance ability, but they never get a chance because they get excluded because they don't fit our model of what a great interviewer looks like or an interviewee. And as a result, most hiring managers and executives make lots of mistakes. I'm going to contend in my research, probably 2/3 of the time make mistakes on candidates that they meet, regardless of the level of the job. And so one of the key things in bringing better people to the table is to have a structure or a methodology that allows you to eliminate these common mistakes that occur in interviewing and get to the truth and find out real information about people. And as the title of the program indicates, you know, how do you identify, probably shouldn't say how do you identify, how do you eliminate embellishments during an interview? So with that, you know, going back 15 some years, my partners and I started to do some research. We wrote a book. We're one of the top thought leaders in human resource circles and hiring circles on how to hire more effectively. My partners and I have put together a website that is probably the Internet's greatest collection of free content. Notice I said free. Free content related to hiring and retaining top talent. And I'd urge you, after we finish this program, if you'd like to get into more depth and more detail, there's lots of downloads, articles, summaries, our research, illustrations, templates that you can go and download, cut and paste, and use to improve your hiring process. With that, let's jump right into the first slide of our program. And how we kind of got started down this path is, a number of years ago, before we published our book, we commissioned a study trying to identify what are the top 10 mistakes that senior executives, CEOs, make in the hiring process. You can actually download a copy of this executive summary from our website under the free resources section. I'm not going to go through each of the 10 mistakes because some of them don't have anything to do with today's program, but I do want to make one point, is that the top three mistakes all relate to not spending enough time in the hiring process. Number one mistake that companies make is they don't invest enough time up front to define and specifically articulate the expected performance or success of the candidate 30, 60, 90 days, 120 days, 6 months, 9 months into the job. We traditionally use the job description, which is a listing of the skills and attributes and behaviors we want people to come to the table with, and it is a useless tool, a worthless tool, from the perspective of predicting and managing performance. So the very first step is we have to figure out, what is it we want from people? Not what skill do we want them to have, but what do we want them to do for us? Okay, most companies don't put enough time into that. Number two, most companies don't put enough time into the process of finding the best people they can. We run an ad, we get the bottom third of the candidate pool, and then we suboptimize, lower our standards, and pick the tallest pygmy out of that group because we don't want to do it anymore. We're tired of it, and as a result, sometimes we hire the bottom third instead of getting a really good candidate. If you want to get really good people, you can't skim from the surface of the pond. You've got to actually fish deeply. Okay, so that's the second mistake. The third one is the focus of today's program. We don't spend enough time in the interview process validating, verifying, and vetting every single thing the candidate says to ensure that what we're hearing is the truth. Those three major mistakes, I'm going to suggest, lead to errors in interviewing that results in candidates at least 50% of the time that can't deliver the expected outcomes required in a job. 50% of the time. Here's one thing to think about, perhaps. Is there any other process in your business, any process, where you'll accept that level of random variability? Like the payroll checks you write, the invoices you send to customers. You don't accept it anywhere else. Why do you accept it in hiring? Why do you accept it in interviewing? Hiring and interviewing is like the Wild West in most companies. It's not predicated on a process. It's predicated on how each individual manager wants to do it, based on their own personal experiences throughout their career or life. The minute we start to put a little more rigor around that process, your accuracy in measuring and assessing candidates goes up dramatically. Okay, point two on this slide. How do you overcome these common mistakes that get made in hiring and interviewing? We developed a process a number of years ago. We call it the Success Factor Methodology. We wrote a book around it called You're Not the Person I Hired. You can actually download a copy of that book off our website. And it's a free version of the book, the e-book. If you want to buy the book, you can buy the actual physical hard copy, but the e-book is made available free. And we called it the Success Factor Methodology, and it has five key components to it. I'm going to run quickly through each of those components. But the reality is, it's no different from any other best practice process in hiring. Every process you're going to look at, whether you call it performance-based hiring, top grading, whatever the name is, the Success Factor Methodology, they all have these basic common elements to them. So let's just take a moment and kind of quickly cycle through those so you can picture how interviewing fits into this whole thing. Step one, if you want to hire successful candidates, you got to be able to have a process to define success. And there's a structure and a methodology, and we use an approach called SOARING, which has, you know, it's like a nice little acronym, visualization of soaring up here with the eagles. excuse me, but you can learn more about that from our website. Step two, you got to find the best candidates using best practices in sourcing, including social media like LinkedIn, employee referrals, networking, and job, you know, more effective advertising than placing your modified or full version of your job description online and hoping good candidates get excited about that. Usually what that brings is the bottom third of the candidate pool to the table. Okay, so we got to get better people. Step three, we have to conduct a structured approach to interviewing. We call it a success-based interview, and it has five common core questions. We're going to cycle through those to really get at, can the candidate do the job? Number four, you got to be able to evaluate the candidate of what they said in the interview quickly, easily, and use a common method or platform to pull feedback from each of the people interviewing the candidate. We use a one-page matrix. It takes about 3 to 5 minutes to score at the end of the interview. We call it the eight-level or eight-point success matrix. And finally, step five, even though interviewing is flawed, as is traditionally done, and it's not a great method to assess candidates, it is by far the best method if you do it right. Yet, there's so many mistakes and assumptions and common misperceptions that occur that we have to use other tools and information to validate is what we heard and saw the truth. These include things like reference checking, homework assignments, asking for copies of portfolios of work, copies of their W-2s to validate income, giving them homework assignments, background checks, personality assessments, skill tests, and we take all those pieces of data and look at it and say, is it consistent with what we heard and saw in the interview? Five simple steps to make hiring a systematic and rigorous process. Okay, so now we come back to our third item on this chart, and that is, what are some of the more common errors and mistakes that occur in interviewing among hiring managers? Number one, most hiring managers get seduced by a first impression, and the entire interview falls apart from that point forward. And it is a natural human reaction to either immediately like or dislike someone. We're going to talk more about that in the next slide. There's no relevance to on-the-job performance. We don't measure can people do the work we need them to do. We measure what skills and behaviors and education and other things they're bringing to the table, but we really don't tie it back to what is it we need them to do in our unique culture, in our environment, and in this job over their first year. Number three, we succumb to desperation hiring. All of you, I'm sure, have felt that desperate sense of trying to get someone aboard. This particularly sets in after about 4 to 6 weeks when you don't have the job filled. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. You've rerun the same ad twice and gotten the same candidates a second time. No one's fitting your spec. And now you're desperate. You'll take the next warm heartbeat that walks through the door, probably. This is where first impressions again come into play. Candidates embellish and exaggerate. I'm fond of asking groups that I present to, this really gets at the core issue of our program today. I ask groups, think about all the people you've met over the last, let's say, 3 to 4 years in the interview process. What percentage have embellished, exaggerated, and lied about what they have done or what they thought they could do for you? And without hesitation, I'm going to suggest that almost everyone says over 100%. I actually joke around and I tell people I think it's between 120 and 140%. Now, you might be wondering, how could Barry come up with a number like that? It's because people embellish and exaggerate more than once, 14 times on their resume, 17 times in the phone interview, 37 times in the... When people tell us what they've done, how they've done it, what they can do, we have to be able to wrap our hands around that and believe it with a high degree of credibility versus crossing our fingers and hope they make it through the probationary period. So we're going to talk about how we actually get to that stage of eliminating lies, embellishment, and exaggeration. or what I like to call, how do we get to the truth? We use poor criteria to base our questions upon. We use the traditional, what I call, standard, stupid, inane interview questions that are based on tribal hiring that, you know, basically, these are the questions I was asked 13 years ago when I got hired, so I'll just keep asking those questions. Or I learned what questions to ask from the dead guy who taught the old guy who taught me 10 years ago. Are these the right questions, the wrong questions? What are we basing them upon? We have a very short period of time in an interview to collect enough information to make an accurate decision. The 20 traditional, stupid, inane, canned, silly interview questions don't get us to that stage. So we're going to talk about better interview questions. And then finally, the entire process is flawed in the way we interview, assess what we measure, how we measure it, and many times how we interpret what we're actually hearing. So we're going to come up with a better approach that puts a little more rigor around, can we interview and actually figure out, can this person deliver what we need and do it with a set of behaviors and style that's consistent with our company values and culture? With that, let's jump to our next slide in the program and talk a little about the influence of first impressions. First, before we even get to first impressions, let's talk on this first bullet point, what are we really measuring in the interview? When you interview a candidate, what are you measuring? You're measuring how well they interview. Most of the time, interviews are based on how well does someone interview. We're not trying to determine, can they do the job? Do they have the skills to be successful? Can they deliver the results we want? We're measuring, are you a good or bad interviewer? Interviewing has nothing to do with performance on the job. Interviewing is an arbitrary, a one-time event that has absolutely nothing to do with on-the-job success. Brad and I, my partner, have been doing executive search now for 25 years. We've probably worked on over 1,000 search assignments. We've probably collectively between us interviewed over 250,000 candidates. And to this day, we cannot find one single correlation that links how people interview with their on-the-job performance, as interviewing is traditionally done in most companies. Isn't that frightening? So one of the things we've got to do is we almost have to conduct a complete mind shift or framework shift and stop measuring how well someone interviews as a candidate and start thinking about how will this person be as an employee in that job. Converting from how good are you as a candidate to thinking about how will you be as an employee. What happens in first impressions? Well, I guess the first question is, how long does it take to make a first impression? Most people would say somewhere between about 2 seconds and 30 seconds. It's pretty quick. Once we get seduced by that first impression, we either turn on to the person or we turn off. Let me talk about the issue of when we turn on to someone. So here's the scenario. Bob's about to conduct an interview. He's been looking to fill the job for 5 to 6 weeks. He's finally got, he's gone through 5 or 6 interviews. None have really been viable. He's been turned off by all the candidates. Oh, finally he's got a winner. Candidate's coming in tonight. Fortunately, Bob's been at the office for 12 hours. He's been beat up by every customer, vendor, and supplier. He's about to go into a 7 p.m. interview. Candidate works on the other side of town. Couldn't get over there until after work. 7 o'clock at night. Candidate, 7 o'clock. Candidate walks in the door. They arrive on time. They're dressed well. They shake the hiring manager's hand firmly, look him straight in the eyes, and in the first few minutes of the conversation are able to utter at least a couple of complex sentences. Now, if you're this hiring manager, what are you thinking? Winner, right? I can go home. I'm done. Here's what happens. Bob's just made a positive first impression. For the next 20 or 30 minutes, is he going to ask deep, insightful, probing, in-depth questions? Of course not. What kind of questions is Bob going to ask? Softballs. When could you start? Do you have reliable transportation? How about that soccer game the other day? Why do we do this? when we meet someone we like, we have a good rapport, good relationship. By the way, most studies of interviewing that have been done over the last quarter of a century show that over 80% of the rationale in hiring someone is based on rapport and chemistry. Over 80%. Forget about competency and ability and skills and knowledge and performance. Most of the decision to hire someone is based on, do I like you? We got to stop doing that, because that's where we make a lot of mistakes. So when this happens, we fall in love upon first impression. We like the person. We ask the softball questions. Why do we stop asking tough questions? Why don't we dig and penetrate and probe and act like a detective and validate what they can do? Why do we just basically throw up our arms and start asking softballs? There's a couple of reasons. One, we're desperate to make the hiring decision. Two, we're blinded because we've fallen in love with the candidate. But number three, really, at a very base level, I already love you. I want you to get the job. If I keep asking you in-depth, detailed, specific questions, I might discover your warts, and then I'm not going to like you anymore. So instead, I won't ask you any more interview questions. And this sounds comical, doesn't it? It sounds dysfunctional. I have sat in hundreds of these interviews with my clients and seen this exact, it's almost like somebody waves a magic wand over the hiring manager and their whole persona changes. We got to start getting more specific, more precise, and stay objective in the hiring process. And that really gives a good segue to this third point on the slide. How do you minimize first impression mistakes? I'm going to give you the number one way to do it. And this has been documented in study after study over the years in hiring and interviewing studies. If you want to improve your accuracy, you've got to have the questions you're going to ask written down in advance of the interview. You have to have the questions you're going to ask written down in advance of the interview. Most of the time, most hiring managers, they wing it. They haven't even looked at the resume before the candidate comes in. They haven't prepared their list of questions. They're asking, you know, as the candidate comes in, sits down in front of them, they start asking the throwaway questions like, tell me about yourself. And why the candidate is gibbering, you know, off on different tangents. What are you doing? You're trying to think of what next question to ask the candidate. You haven't even heard a word the candidate has said. So one of the ways to minimize first impression mistakes is to have the questions you're going to ask written down before you start the interview. And then secondly, have a methodology to those questions and how to probe and validate whatever the candidate says is really the truth. And we're going to get to that in just a couple of minutes. Let's jump to our next slide. How do you prepare for the interview? What is real preparation? Well, it's looking at the candidate's background on the resume. It's having done a good phone interview, probing at least in a couple of areas to validate that they're worthy of coming in. And in phone interviewing, I'm going to suggest this is something every individual hiring manager has to do. This is not something that can be delegated to a recruiter. It's not something that can be delegated to a human resource professional. It's something the hiring manager has to do themselves to validate the candidate can deliver the results desired. That brings up another problem. We haven't defined the results yet. You'll notice that's the second bullet point on the slide. It's impossible to be successful at interviewing, to validate, verify, and vet someone's performance, ability, or fit without first defining what success is required in the job. Not the skills they're bringing to the table, not their educational background, not their prior experience, the stuff that's on the job description, but what is it you want them to do? How will you know they've been successful after 30 days on the job? How will you know they've been successful after 90 days, 120 at the end of their first year? If we don't do that exercise up front, none of this stuff that we're talking about today makes any sense. So we have to get prepared for the interview by first going through that process. Once you define success, you basically got 90% of your interview done. And then you could validate it in a 20 to 30 minute phone interview, and then when you bring the candidate in, dig deeper into each of those core areas or key issues. One of the reasons, and I touched on this a little earlier, is why interviewing fails, is we tend to ask the traditional 20 canned, stupid, inane interview questions that everybody asks. What do they sound like? tell me about yourself. What do you think you could do for us? Why are you here today? What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? We really like people who enjoy working in teams. How do you feel about teams? And what happens is candidates prepare for these interviews. They know what the canned questions are, and they regurgitate back to you exactly what you want to hear. So we have to use a better set of questions. And what I'd like to do is take you through what we call the five core interview questions. These can be asked at any level, and they will yield 80 to 90% of the data you need to make a good hiring decision. Question number one is high initiative. Top caliber candidates, whether they're on the janitorial staff or they're a senior executive, have extreme levels of initiative in the role they perform. They go above and beyond the call of duty. They don't wait to be told what to do. They anticipate what needs to be done. They get it done and then come and tell you. They show proactivity. They go above and beyond the call of duty. I mean, think about it for a minute. The people who work for you, are your best performers typically the ones who have more initiative than their peers? Okay. So this is really easy to measure in people. You would say to the candidate, can you give me two or three examples of where you've gone above and beyond the call of duty in a previous role? Give me an example of what you would consider to be high initiative or proactivity, where you weren't required to do something. Okay, so that's question number one. Question number two is what we call flawless execution. This is not about doing your job perfectly. It's about getting your job done. In most companies, there is a multitude of crap that gets thrown in the way of you doing your job. So you go to your boss and you say, oh, Barry, I'm really sorry I couldn't do that, but the vendor who promised to deliver these supplies at 2 didn't do it. Department A was supposed to get me this spreadsheet at 4 o'clock, but they haven't delivered it, so sorry, I can't get this done for you. What do we call those things? I call them E&E, excuses and explanations. The very best candidates don't give E&E. They get it done. They go under the roadblocks, behind the speed bumps. They jump over tall buildings. They got contingency plans, gap time, and they get it done every single time. They hit the time frame, the budget, the metric, the requirement of what's required. How many of you have someone like this on your team? I'll bet many of you who are on this call have someone that you would consider to be your go-to person, that when you've got a tough project that's got numerous hurdles, problems, and obstacles, you always turn to that person because you know they're going to power their way through it. Flawless execution, getting to the end goal line, putting the ball in the basket, finishing. It's not enough just to do the work and activities. You got to finish. You got to complete. I coach high school girls basketball as one of the things that I do. And I tell my girls it's not enough to run, 80 to 90 feet down the floor, fling that little orange ball in the air and hope it goes in that little orange hoop. You got to finish. The number one problem in basketball, the number one problem, whether you're a third grade basketball team or you're an NBA level team, is the team can't put the ball in the hoop 1 foot away. They can't make a layup. So you got to be able to finish, and it's the same thing in business. Number three, leadership. At a supervisory level, a management level, we want to measure, can this person execute by leveraging through others? Do they hire great people? Do they retain top staff? Do they engage their people? Are their people committed, excited? Do they flawlessly execute? Do they bring people with them from former jobs? Are they a great leader and manager? At an individual level, where someone doesn't have supervisory responsibilities, one of the ways we measure leadership is, what's their personal leadership like? Do they subordinate their own ego and needs to go above and beyond the call of duty to help the rest of the team look great? My favorite example of this is, if you'll recall the U.S. soccer game for the World Cup against, I think it was against Brazil where they were doing the penalty kicks. And at the end of the game, the coach, I think she was referring to Mia Hamm, said she may not be the captain of the team, leader of the team, but she makes everybody else look great. That's personal leadership. Do you hire people and do you focus on those issues where their ego doesn't get in their way? Number four, those first three, by the way, are behavioral. The last two are specific to the job. They're past successes. the things that you've defined they need to be able to deliver in your role. Do their past successes match up with that? Are they comparable in size, scope, sophistication, complexity, effort, length of time, number of people, budgetary size? And then finally, the one area that most companies really screw up is what we call adaptability. How many of you have hired someone with the exact same job title in other companies, in a similar company, industry, and they came aboard your business and they failed? Happens all the time. Why? Because your unique culture, your environment, the pace, the energy level, how people engage, how they work with each other, the level of rigor you apply is different from wherever they came from. Doesn't have to be exactly the same, but when the gap is large, when the culture gap is large, that's where people typically fail. And so one of the things we've got to be able to do is measure how they, what those environments are that they've come from. Okay. So the question in that area would be, how would you do this in our environment, and how would that compare to if you had to do the same work, result, outcome, deliverable in your past environment? Five simple questions to validate success and determine whether someone can do what you need them to do. Now, these questions are important. They're important, but not nearly as important as this next piece. And we call this next piece eliminating embellishment, exaggeration, and lies, which is really the core of our program or the topic today. What percentage embellish and exaggerate? Yes, you're right. 120 to 140%. So I'm going to give you... Wait, let me back up for a minute. I think some candidates actually embellish and exaggerate, and they don't even realize they're doing it. They just... Somehow they've rationalized in their mind that they were responsible for the result on that project. But they didn't really do the work. Their peer did it. Their boss did it. Their subordinate did it. Yet they're claiming that was their result or their outcome. And so one of the things we got to do is we got to extract that in the interview to figure out, are you really the person who did that work? I'm going to give you two tips right now for getting to the truth, for which there isn't a candidate on earth that can make this up fast enough. Tip number one. From this stage forward, every single time a candidate opens their mouth and words spew out, I would like you to have a knee-jerk, visceral, gut-level reaction. And it goes like this. Can you give me an example of that? Can you illustrate that for me? Can you give me a specific? Never again allow a candidate to say anything to you in an interview that is superficial, generic, at 40,000 feet, ambiguous, philosophical, without, boom, nailing them to the table, asking for a specific example or illustration of what they meant. A great example is the traditional interview question of what are your weaknesses? And by the way, you're going to promise me you'll never ask that question again. It's a candid interview question, and everybody prepares a candid interview response. So what have I heard over the years? This is where people convert a strength into a weakness. I'm a perfectionist. I work too hard. I take on too much. I'm too demanding. I push people too hard. I'm hard on myself. I care too deeply. So now you come back, you've got this newfound technique to ask for an example, and you say to the candidate, can you give me an example of where you've been a perfectionist and it's either helped or hindered you in the performance of your job? Could you illustrate for me, Dana, how working too hard has really been detrimental to your success? Now, what percentage of candidates do you think are going to do this? You're exactly right, zero. Why do they do this? Because no one believes you'll ever ask that follow-up question. And in fact, that's the way most of us interview. We glide across the interview at 40,000 feet, asking superficial questions and accepting as the given truth whatever the candidate said to us. Dana, what about this? Oh, yeah, that's a good answer. Now, what about this? Oh, yep, I like that answer too. Now, what about... Instead of asking 15 to 20 questions in the interview, I'm going to suggest we ask very few, but dig deeply into each one. And this leads us to our next slide and point two of getting to the truth. So again, point one is asking for examples, examples, examples. Point two is, oh, Dana, I just lost the launch controls. Oh, never mind, I got them back.
Got it.
Sorry.
Okay. Good.
Let's see, did that work? Yeah. Okay. We call it the magnifying glass questions. It's digging deeply into each example someone gives you. Well, Bob, that's interesting. Tell me, how many people were on the project? Did you win any rewards or recognition for the work you did? How long did it last? What was your specific role in the project? Can you describe to me the length of time it took from beginning to end? What kind of budget did you have? What were some of the problems you ran into on the project? How'd you overcome those? And we engage in a conversation of digging deeper and deeper and deeper. What you're going to find is when you start peeling back the layers of the onion, there isn't a candidate on earth that can make this up fast enough. They've either done it and they can articulate it in clear, precise language, or they will literally self-implode in front of you. We want to be a detective. We want to ask the question in different ways. Well, who was responsible for doing this? And this was your piece? Can you share with me how you took initiative around that? How did that relate to what Bob was doing on the project? And here's a bonus tip. Slide a blank piece of paper across the table and ask him to draw their org chart. What's above them, what's below them, what's at a peer level. And then use that as the framework for digging into what their specific role was in that role or on that project. Two simple steps to get to the truth in interviewing. Okay, so now we're done with the interview. Now we're actually going to collect some information. We're going to compare our notes. So there are four people that interviewed the candidate. Here's how it works. Bob and Jack interviewed the candidate. Candidate leaves. They go out in the hallway. They meet up at the water cooler. Now they're going to ask each other, what's a traditional question? You all know this question, right? So, what'd you think? So here's where we hear answers back like, I liked him, seemed nice, had a pleasant personality, had a lot of energy, was really enthusiastic, worthless junk, completely irrelevant to measuring can they do the job. We use a tool, we call it the 8-point success matrix. You can read about it on our website. And it goes step by step down through those interview questions, down through those core success traits of figuring out, can the person deliver the outcomes you want and do it with a set of behaviors and style that's consistent with your value and culture? It takes about 3 to 5 minutes to score at the end of the interview. Now we're sitting here in the interview. We go out to the hallway, meet up at the water cooler. Bob turns to Jack, and instead of saying, so, what'd you think? He turns to him and says, line two, initiative and self-motivation. I give Barry a 2, you gave him a 1. What did you hear that I didn't hear? And all of a sudden, our entire conversation moves away from the superficialities and generalities and ambiguities to specifics, content, quantification, facts, figures, details. It forces everyone on the interview committee to dig in, probe, document what they heard, and structures a feedback mechanism to really get to the truth in comparing candidate by candidate or interviewer by interviewer assessment. Unfortunately, the interview is not enough, as I mentioned very early in our program. You've got to externally validate the interview. And, you know, at this stage, I always think of that quote that Ronald Reagan was most famous for during the Nuclear Disarmament SALT II treaties. Many of you may remember that. It's probably the most famous quote he's known for. And the quote was, trust but verify. And I apply that to this stage. Take all these other pieces. Background checks, homework assignments, reference checks, portfolios of work, copies of their former performance reviews, personality assessments like the 16PF that Dana and Ellen use in their practice, and say to yourself, is what I heard and saw in the interview match up with this other external data? And if it doesn't, you got to dig deeper in to validate what's really the truth. Can't just rely on the interview, and you can't rely on this other data. They go hand in hand with each other. Those two things together will bring a lot more rigor to the evaluation and assessment, and you'll be able to really measure, can the person do what we want, and will they do it with a set of behaviors and style that's consistent with our value and culture? This brings us to the last slide in our program. And what I thought we might do is take just a moment, review some of the steps to eliminate embellishment and some of the action steps you might want to employ on a going forward basis. So number one, you have to define success for the job. There are examples and illustrations of that on our website. Brad and I host a weekly internet radio show of about 50 minutes in length. Every one of those radio shows is on our website that you can download or stream. You can also find them on iTunes under the directory listing for Impact Hiring Solutions. Got hundreds of hours of content there. Brad and I have been writing a blog on hiring practices for the last couple of years. There are hundreds of articles there. There are literally thousands of hours of content on our website in audio, blog, forms, templates, tools that all get at this. And I'd urge you that when we complete this program, you might want to dig a little deeper because this is but the tip of the iceberg of what we're doing in this 45-minute presentation. So the steps, define success. Step two, have the questions listed of what you're going to ask the candidate. Step three, conduct a 20 to 30-minute structured phone interview to determine whether you want to bring the person in-house. Step four, make sure that every single thing the candidate says, they open their mouth, words spew out, you ask for a precise, specific example, and if the example wasn't strong enough, don't hesitate to say, well, that was interesting, but could you give me another one? Next step, use the magnifying glass questions to peel the onion. Dig deeply. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes per example to really uncover, did they really do the work, or were they basically just standing in the conference room one afternoon while other people were discussing it? And then the last step is use other validation sources to verify and vet, is what you heard and saw in the interview really the truth? A few simple steps to dramatically improve hiring and interviewing accuracy. And then to step back from an either further perspective, I suggest you might want to consider moving down the path of creating a success or performance-based hiring process that includes the definition of success for every role, bringing better people to the table, and incorporating the interview steps we talked about. And in fact, it will help improve retention of your existing employees at the same time. So, to bring this to a close, the real question would be, what's your next step? What, when we finish this call, what's the first thing you're going to do from what we talked about to start improving the way candidates are interviewed, assessed, evaluated, verified, vetted, to ultimately determine, is this someone who's top talent? Whether you're hiring, again, someone for the maintenance staff, someone on a plant floor, a customer service group, or a senior level executive, the process we just talked about works for every single one of those. Dana, I'll transition and turn the program back to you.
That was phenomenal. Thank you, Barry. In just a few minutes after we conclude this show and turn off the recording equipment, we'll be opening up the line so you'll have an opportunity to talk directly with Barry. And I'm going to ask everybody right now, because we have so many people attending today, to please put your phone on mute so then when we open the line up, you can just unmute your phone and ask Barry questions. Barry, if you can go to the last slide we have, just push it forward, that would be great. You'll see on your screen in a second an area to register for our upcoming January 12th Open Line program, which is entitled 7 Imperatives for a 21st Century Leader. Please sign up today and reserve space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint of today's program, so please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Again, we're going to open the line in just a second. I just want to shut down this part of the program because we've had feedback that a number of people don't like to have themselves recorded when we have the Q&A time. So Barry and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that were shared. If you'd like to contact Barry to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together, or to discuss any ideas shared today, you'll see Barry's contact information on your screen in the lower left-hand corner. And the information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in San Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Hold the line. Everyone have a great day. I'm going to turn the recording equipment off, and we will have Barry on the line live in just 1 second.